This is Mark Roberts. It is March 2nd, 2010. I'm interviewing Thomas Cork about his experiences in the Korean War. So give a little basic background.
Well, basically, I'm one of the few Marines that went into a segregated outfit. I was the only black in the outfit going to Korea. The strange thing about it, when I got on the ship to go to Korea, they put me in an all-white unit, and I'm the only black. So you know how that was very upsetting to me to be ignored, just put aside that wasn't part of the outfit. But strange thing about it, when I got to Kobe, they switches off a regular ship onto LST to go into Incheon. But now the white Marines begin to accept me, the fact that I'm part of the outfit. They're going to have to deal with me one way or the other. I was trained in San Diego, at Camp Pendleton, really, to be a machine gunner, light machine gunner. I'm the gunner, and I had a white system gunner. So our lives kind of depend on each other. So we get into Korea, and I more or less told him, you like me or not, we're going to have to work together. But little by little, I began to realize that I'm part of the Marines like everybody else. Look back over it, you kind of understand those guys because they had never been experienced that, and neither had I. I mean, it's new to me, new to them. So it was a learning experience for not only the outfit, for me to be able to melt into that group like everybody else, maybe become a Marine, a gunner, which I was trained to do. We get into Incheon. I'm part of the, I think, about 13th wave going into Incheon. But when I get in there, I mean, this new, here's a young man seeing combat firsthand, getting on off the ship, on these boats to get into the landing. The first thing I saw when I got there were Marines that was in front of me were killed. They had them stacked up just like cordwood. Oh. And now I'm getting a realization that what I'm in for. So, but it goes on. We thought we go in and we move inland, up and up and up. We start moving up. We went through Incheon, like I went through Seoul, Korea, like everybody else did. We lost Seoul more than once. We go in through Seoul and come back out, take it again. We went to hills. We take a hill, lose it, go back down, start all over again. This one particular thing that stands out in my mind is that we had on one of those hills, I'm not sure what name, they call them everything, Pork Chop Hill, Hill, whatever. We get on top of one hill, you look out, there's another hill. But at the bottom of this hill in front of us, there was a cave like. We could see, what we thought at the first was civilian going in and out of this building. But the strange thing about it, they go in fat and come out skinny, go in fat and come out skinny. And we called back to recon, told them what we had up here. And he said, well, let's sit tight. We're trying to figure out what's going up there. And then finally, the word came on to us, said, well, you just do what you have to do. So my buddy and I with machine guns. Strange thing about it, a light machine gun that we had the air cool. It also had tracers on them. And we started finding these tracers, and you could see where the tracers landing because you could just follow the tracers. All of a sudden, this building took off, exploded. What had happened to, that was the ammunition depot there. And these people carrying that ammo in there, we found out later, they were military people. But they take off, and we found that quite often that they would have on civilian clothes. We as a military in the United States, you're not allowed to do that unless there's a particular reason that you're supposed to do it. You just can't change uniform and that sort of thing. But they would. They put on civilian clothes and go in there. But this cave were ammo, and we got accommodation for it. Even, that's how things happen to you. You never know what's going to happen. You just do things, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden it pops up to you. Then after that, we started moving on. And we moved on up to the reservoir, the Chosen Reservoir. Everybody called it Frozen Chosen. And that's the reason for it, I'll tell you in a minute. But we was at what they call a Yellow River. And we could look right over into China, just like looking across the Indiana Bridge. We could see walking. They're just walking back and forth. And we're thinking that the war is over. MacArthur gave us word that the Korean War, we had defeated them. We had actually defeated North Korea. They were completely out of war to a point. But we didn't realize that the Communist China was going to move in. We would probably have been better off if we had known that, because we would set up a more security than we did. But we had no idea of anything would be coming across that river to us, because we had to feed everybody on the side. But as it may, the Chinese come across in thousands. Every now and then we get a word from a recon in the back of us saying there's fighting Chinese back there, one or two, whatever. So we still didn't understand what was going on. But at, all of a sudden, if you excuse the expression, all broke out. Now the Chinese behind us and Chinese in front of us. Now, the only thing we had there was 8th Army on one side, the Rock Division on the other. For Rock Division is for information wide. Republic of Korea, that's their army. And I see it now, I don't flip my story, that you see in Iraq and other different places, those men are not trained. They're not trained, and they just put in the uniform and say, okay, you go fight. Give as it may, the South Korean did not understand the severity of what we had there. So the Chinese had really run over them. And when they did that, it caught us off too. Now, our Marines up there, I told it before, I think we counted 13 days we were cut off there. We had water maybe one day, food maybe one day. And a little story is, you try to make water out of snow. If you'll try to experience that one day, you take a cup of water and you get a teaspoon of snow and get a cup of water. But anyway, and they start dropping supplies to us. Okay, when they first dropped the supplies, the Chinese got them. Okay, so then they got an outfit to drop a dummy down, and they went for that, and so they dropped off. So that's how we got our supply. Now, we got supply enough maybe last us a day or two. Now, we still short our ammo, and we only had maybe one tank, which probably didn't need that one tank, because the tanks could only ride on the road. We had to travel on the side road. Basically, we traveled at night, because daytime, they know exactly where you are. Now, here's where it comes in. Cold weather. Now, we had what they call a felt boot. It was a good boot. Nothing wrong with the boot. But you had to change that felt on a regular basis. And you're not going to change no shoe out in combat, no. So that's where the weather set in on me, because I got frostbitten. The other thing is, and I tell my little kids about this all the time. They laugh at me. Two things happened. First of all, the ground was frozen. And you work in pairs. You take your K-bar and your shovel, which is made like a pick, and you slice out this frozen ground. You make it like a slice of cake, and you dig down as far as you can go, and then you find it, throw it at the bottom. You take that, make a little igloo to a point out of it. So we did that and covered ourselves. And at nighttime, I was telling my grandson about this a couple of days ago, about snow, keep you warm. I told him one time that the scouts found out, if they get out in the snow, they are warm. So during the nighttime, if it's snow, with the little pup tents, you take your two together, you tie one together, you one pin on the other. You got half, he got the other half. You put them together, and you make a tent. And that's how you get out in it. So this particular night, we put our flares, okay? And somehow, the wind blew our flare that it went off during the night. Now, I'm on the watch like my 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever. I am scared to death. Now, I know here come the, I could see the Chinese. But what had happened, I had focused on this bush. And this is my right hand guy. And that bush became enemy during the night. Little by little, it got bigger and bigger. And eyes can play tricks on you. Now, I'm looking at this bush thinking that it's the Chinese. But here we go again. I had good training. I had good discipline. I had sense enough to know if I had started firing, everybody would start firing. Friendly fired, everybody would have been. So my thought was, just watch it and see what's going to happen. Watch it. The more I watch, the more what. I'm sitting right looking right at it. I had this light machine gun. All I had to do, start firing, all hell broke loose. But I held my peace. But the funny part about it, when daylight came, this bush became a bush again. this buddy of mine, we're in it together. He said, "Man, what happened to you?" I said, "Man, I couldn't sleep." But I never told him. But I don't think I ever told him about this. And so much of that. But let me backtrack just a little bit. And now, you may hear the good part of my combat, but there are some things that went to me that pretty upset me. One was, go back to Camp Pendleton. Now, here's I'm talking about the segregation part of it now. I'm here in a white outfit. Nobody won't be involved with me. Won't talk to me. But luck would have it, whatever. I came friend with a guy from Mississippi, one guy from Akron, Ohio. We came friends. We read each other's mail. We just had a good time. We go out on Liberty. Some place they could go, I couldn't go, vice versa. There are a lot of black places that wouldn't let him in, let those in. We came friends. We just buddies. We get on this ship to go to Korea. We get in Kobe, Japan. Our ship pulls in. There was a band playing Welcome Us in the Kobe, black band. Now, if you realize how ships are, you deck by decks, one on the other, you stand, the guy behind on down the line like that, so everybody can see. Well, this good buddy of mine from Mississippi was standing behind me with both hands on my shoulder. We just hitting each other, just having a good time, like young boys would do. Some reason, I to this day, I don't understand. He said, "I didn't know they had a nigger band in Kobe." Now, I'm from Kentucky. I heard that word so many times, it didn't bother me at all in Kentucky because I was used to it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't expect that from him. But looking back, I guess you should have from what part of the country. I got different opinion about that. Some say I should have confronted him. Some say I did the right thing. But, you know, give or take, whatever. But the unfortunate part about it, he went his grave because I heard a lady got killed. Never knowing, I don't think he really understood what he said. I really, now look at it. Because I said myself, sometimes you say things, I wish I hadn't said that. It just pops out.
Yeah.
Now, probably from where he's from Mississippi, you know, I'm sure he called people before or whatever. But during my whole time with him, working with him, during my whole time, never said a word to me, never called me colored boy, never called me anything but Tommy. Tommy. And we were friends. That really upset me. Okay, now, fast forward a little bit. This other guy was from Canton. Went on to Korea and come back and whatever. I go to my veteran hospital right here in Louisville. There's a hospital, a veteran hospital called Nichols Hospital, way years ago. I don't remember that or not. On Manzik Rain. You know anything about Louisville at all?
A little bit.
Okay, next second discussion. It was a veteran hospital, okay? I went in this veteran hospital. They have one ward for blacks, okay? They called it Ward 31. That's where I went. And now I'm a surgical patient. I should have been somewhere for being operated on or being taken care of because of my foot's gone, what's left of it. But I was only one ward, okay? Then somehow this guy from Canton found out where I was. Believe it or not, he come all the way from Canton, Ohio to Louisville to see me at this Vernon Hospital. He gets to the hospital. They tell him he's not here. He's not, no Thomas Clark in this hospital. He said, he's here somewhere because I have found out where he is. He's in this hospital. Somebody walking through apparently must have told him, if it's a colored ward, whatever you want to call us, then go 31. Okay, he comes to 30 ward, 31. He can't get in. They won't let him in. So they sent word in, there is whatever, that somebody outside wants to see you. I get my little wheelchair and go out, and lo and behold, here you stand. I mean, you could thought we're brothers. I mean, so happy to see you, hug, talk, whatever. We talked and talked. Now, then he leaves. Finally, he said, I got to get back on the highway, get back to Canton, Ohio. I never saw him again. I don't know if he decided he won't be bothered with me, but the only thing was, since then, I got a card from him, birthday card. He just disappeared. Hmm. I went to VA about 5 years ago, and I was telling the guy down there because I got artificial shoe and that bit. I was telling him a story about that. He said, "Let me get on this pandemic, she couldn't find it." He found about four guys that same name, but none of them lived in Canton. So I sent all them guys a letter. Never heard from him. Apparently, I said, if you the guy was in Korea, a guy named Thomas Clark, please give me a call, write me back, let me know, and you know, I apologize for not staying in touch with her. Never heard more from her. So that's it. But my whole career in the Marines, I had some good times, bad times. Now, some of these tapes, you probably see a little different. Some of these guys on here, they this upset and feel all bad. I had some good times in the Marine Corps. I took my good and my bad. I was trained at that Muffle Point. Okay, when I get down there, let me get hear my story again. Now, I don't, how much time I have with this? My wife said, "You don't get up and start rambling," because I don't want to.
You got a good hour.
Let me back to another story. I didn't want to go to the Army. I was drafted for the Army. So still going to the Army, I wanted to go. My brother's in the Army and whatever. I wanted to go to the Marines. But they wouldn't take me. So I went down. And he has, you got to take a test. So went down to an old federal building in Louisville. Take his test all day long. They tried, I guess, the best to discourage me from going. I passed it anyway. I was determined. I'm at way. I don't mean to brag or anything, but I'm gonna tell you. If you hear some of my story, you say, "Well, that guy is whatever, whatever." So I made a high score. Now there was two white Marines that was going to Marine Corps at the same time. But as story would have it, I didn't know where they was going. I thought they were going to the same place I was going. Really, we get on the train at 7th Street. Okay. Now I had made the high score, so they gave me the meal tickets. I had free meal ticket. My one, these two white boys meal ticket. Get on this train coming out of Louisville, going to Ashland, on to Richmond, Virginia, on down North Carolina. So we get about close to Ashland. This conductor comes to me and tells me, "Young man, they're going to take this car off. You're riding on. You got to move up front." The country boy didn't know any different. Move up to the front of this car, and later I found out later, there was a segregated car. All blacks up there, okay. In the meantime, my two little buddies are back here in the car. Mealtime come. Here come the conductor. Said, those two Marines back there said, "You have the meal ticket." "Yes, I do." And he said, "I want them to come up here and get their meal ticket." I wanted to get up and go back. Take them back to them. I'm still dumb. I'm country. You know, I meant the boy no harm. I mean, they just boy like me, you know. So he said, "No, you stay up here and let them come get you. So they come up and got the meal ticket. And then, I don't know what they asked me or whatever, why I'm up there and they're back there. I don't remember all that now. But anyway, that's the first time. So they come get the meal ticket. They go back. Now, they got another meal coming up. Okay. This next meal, they had to do the same thing. Come to me and get the meal ticket and go back. Now, all this time, I'm still, this country's all get out, never realized it, what they were doing to me. So anyway, we go on and get on the regiment down to North Carolina, get to North Carolina now, to Camp Lejeune. Get to Camp Lejeune, this is a big old pretty place. I'm happy now. So I got there on the weekend. So they fed me, whatever. So a Monday morning come around, so they come and got me. Said, "You're going over to Bumper Point." I had never even heard of Bumper Point. Where? Bumper Point. That's where the blacks are trained over there, colored, whatever they call me there. Get on this truck. Go to over to Bumper Point. Meantime, I'm past all these white Marines. They having a good time out here. I'm going on this truck, going across the river, railroad track, over in the swamps. And that's what they call it, swamp. And it's a reason for why they call that too. I'm going. I pull in this. Oh my God! These tents look like little cubby holes, whatever. Snakes, rattlesnakes, and all kind of animals that you can think of were on this base. So, but meantime, I go down in and they start to train me. Now, let me get this straight real quickly. I got as good a training that any other Marines anywhere. I set myself against that because those black drill instructor made sure you learn what you're supposed to learn. Now, if you ever see some of those documentaries somewhere, you'll see. If you see movies, mm-hmm. That's what they did. I mean, you feel like a fool. I mean, they make you do some crazy thing. You jump and all that kind of stuff. But they're training you. And when you get out of that boot camp, your first 6 weeks is kind of basic, whatever. Then you go into a combat training. And on up the line like that, but you know your weapons, you know your what you're supposed to be doing, don't do. Now, real quick again, I'm skipping around with this about my training. Down in Camp Pendleton, when I made me a gunner, you also had to carry a carbine and a 45. Okay, now show how they did. They sent me on the rifle range with all the other white boys. But when we fired, whatever, fired, they pulled me aside and said, somebody's firing on your target. What are you talking about? He said, you did make that high score. You're firing on your, somebody's firing on your target. But what they didn't realize, I'm Kentuckian. I know how to shoot. My grandfather, all of them know how to shoot. So it backfired on them. They took his carbine. They took his 45 and put me on the range by myself. Nobody, all them other guys was gone. Well, I'm fine on this range, but they made it perfect out of me. I mean, I got, I think out of 300, I must have got 240. I mean, I got a high score. Now they're upset. So they said, okay, get you the carbine. Like the regular carbine just has his, the old time had the 30, then they got made one with the, you turn it around and it has two magazines on. You turn one down, flat the other. Okay, what you do with that? This big old guy, pardon my expression, big old redneck guy, I mean, he was military, said, okay, what you do with this one? Put the target up there, and what you got to do, you got to fire real quickly and tip it out of there and put it on there, and you got time. I did it. Perfect on that. Not perfect, I mean, the high school, and they thought I was going to be. Now, to still them come back to tell me whatever, they didn't tell me anything. When I found out my score, what I made, I was getting ready to go to Korea. Somehow, by pure accident, I got a chance to see what I fired. And I think it was like 240 out of 300. I mean, I did it in. I wasn't trying to impress anybody. I was just doing so but that part of my experience. The list goes on. Down at Camp Lejeune, you go on Liberty, okay? And they warned us, when you go into Jacksonville, you need to go in with somebody. You know, you don't go by yourself because the town's not very friendly to you, and not only the town itself, the MPs, it's not going to be very nice to you. The SPs, any military people, will not be kind to you. So I'm going to town. I got on this bus and goes in Liberty. I'm coming down this little street in Jacksonville. These three Marines was walking. There were three of them, young men, walk across the street. And I'm walking on the side right there. And I know that we're going. You know, you meet somebody like, hey, you just kind of you let that one pass. And I'm getting on my side, let them guys go by. Instead of them going past me, they literally hit me, and out in the street I go. My hat went one way, and I went down your phone. Now the MPs come. Still them getting those guys. They get me because my cap had gotten dirty, my uniform. I had to go back to base. And I tried to explain to those guys. I said, and then, of course, you know, they called me and said, you get back to base. Get on the bus, go back to the base. Now, the bus is another story. If you ever get a chance, look at one of those documentaries, you'll see some things on there that other guys said about this. There's a bus goes back from Jacksonville to the base. You only had, I think, two or three seats on that bus. If you missed that, if the bus was empty up here, full back here, nobody can get on it. You had a line. So if your bus is loaded, you get the next bus. If there was another one time I missed that bus and I had to get a cab, go back to the base. So matter of fact, a strange thing happened. Here's a funny story. You wouldn't believe it. I'm roaming around at like 11 o'clock at night trying to get a bus, get a cab, whatever. This white cab pulled up to me. I said, oh God. This guy walked, he said, Marines, what are you trying? I said, I'm getting back to base. I said, I think you only may have a couple of dollars because you only made $50, $60 a month. He said, come on, I'll run you back. I said, oh God, this guy, I said, I know this guy to do something crazy. He brought me back to the base. Now, show how strange the things are with it. We get to the gate, they wouldn't let him come on the base. I said, now, what kind of thing is this? This cab was bringing me back to the base. He could not pull that cab through that gate to let me out. So they put me out on the gate. And I made I walk all the way to my barracks. Now you figure that out. Yeah. Some. But anyway, I made it all right. I went on. And some things happened to me, different other places. But basically, I'm not crying the blues because I know that, you know, I did all right in Marine Corps. And then, of course, when I got out of Marine Corps, and they discharged me from the old Nichols, like I said before. Before then, they start, when I left Korea, they sent me to Hawaii, Midway, Travis, and California. Then they flew me all the way across the country to Westover, Massachusetts, to St. Albans, New York, for, they never had anybody had severe frostbite as I had. Because I had my fingers, nose, ear, this foot was gone, the other foot was frostbitten. But what they was trying to do is best they could save what I had left. So they had a Navy doc, some Navy doctors in St. Albans that had experienced, I think I've been up in Alaska somewhere, that they had experienced a certain amount of frostbite. But what they was concerned about, me getting gangrene and what literally killed me. So I stayed up there. That's a good time in New York. I had a good time in New York because there was a group of ladies in New York called the 52 Ladies. They either had sons in the Marine Corps, not in Marine Corps, in the military. They had come get us. We went ball games. We went Ed Sullivan show. We just everything in New York. They just had a good time with it. I saw Cavanella. We saw Don Newcomb. Jackie Robinson, Ernie Banks, only know about football, played for San Francisco. Buddy Young. And there, most people don't realize that was a football team way years ago, was in New York, called the Yankee Dodger football team, professional football. And that's been 50 years, some years ago. But I go and see them. But I just had a good time there. Then after left there, they sent me down to Philadelphia. Now I'm getting wind down out because I begin to understand they got me pretty well a sit for my frostbite because my other hand was pretty good and whatever. The left foot began to do all right, but the right foot wasn't doing good at all because it was this big opening from where they had amputated that part was left. But what they had done, they had left a great big bone in the middle there. And also they had these just wide open. Wide open. And when it's wide open, all the little nerves sitting in there, okay. This I'll say this, it wasn't funny then, but it's funny now. They had put this little gauze on my foot. And every so often they would kind of peel it back and see how it was doing. So this one, they had me on this thing, and this nurse and doc, somebody pulled this thing back to look at it, that nerve. So I jerk. I pulled that whole thing, and off that thing I went, off on the floor, and I rang and wet with sweat. They be scared to death. They got me back up on and gave me some kind of shot, calm me down. But I have never hurt me so bad in my life. I mean, you can understand your finger. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when you do your with the blood test, when they do, you don't have to hurt that much. Really, that 10 times that much. But anyway, I'm just going back and forth with this. I don't know what kind of order you want this stuff in. But then.
What was it like getting out? I mean, what was your first job like?
Okay, let me go through the VA first. Okay. And that's another story in itself. But I'm going to tell you about my job in a few minutes. Okay, I go into the VA hospital, because he told me about that. They treated me like a dog in that veteran hospital. I'm serious. They wouldn't come see about my wound. The blood had set in there, and it was smelling, whatever. And they just kind of shallowly, they had three nurses in, they're all black nurses, on that one ward. I could not go to a surgical ward to be looked at. The doctors up there didn't want to come back there. I mean, it just one thing led to the other. Finally made it through. Then they built a new hospital. After about 6 months, they transferred all of us out of that hospital into the new hospital where it is now. Began to get a little better as far as my treatment concerned. But I'm long way from being able to heal. Now, they finally got... They had a doctor to, he had to come look at it. He said, what are we going to have to do with this? We're going to have to graft it, put a bone for it, got to put a cover on that bone somehow, and then we got to put some flesh on this. Now, you may, I may sound funny to you now, but can you visualize me being in a cross-leg graft? What they did, they brought this foot over to here and attached it. That means I'm in a 6-week cast. Now, bathroom, shower, whatever, I had to do all that. Now, when they took that thing loose, it began to take. What they had to do, once they got it started, it began to grow. And then when they detached it from there, and then they put brought it down and attached it at the bottom of my foot. Now, that's for a long time, I couldn't wear a shoe. Okay, when they still first started buying me a shoe, put a shoe on my foot. Now, you can visualize, you put a shoe on, half a foot, your shoe gonna break. You know, I did that for about a week or two, and they realized that wasn't gonna work. So they decided to make a shoe for me. Now, have you ever seen people with one leg longer than the other? You ever seen the kind of shoe? Yeah. That's what I had. That's one right shoe weighed about 10 pounds. My regular shoe weighed 5 pounds. I'm walking, my back was killing me. I mean, I was hurting. One doctor come and looked at me. He said, they examined me, thought it was all in your man, all that bit. He said, okay, you're not walking right. I said, doctor, what is his name? I'm doing the best I can. He said, I'm not talking about that. What you trying to do, you don't have any balance. You're trying to balance when you can't. He said, what we'll do, we're going to get rid of that shoe. Sent me to St. Louis. Now, they had started here. That St. Louis was the shoe capital of the world. Okay. What they had to do, and they make a regular take a shoe and made shoes. My shoes are made, special made. They had to put a piece in the front, and they had to put what they call a cork part in to make sure not too heavy. Then they had to put like a lambskin in there where my foot won't, because what was happening, that part would begin to irritate and get blistered or whatever. Yeah. And but then on that, they began to do a little better, a little progressive. So then about, I guess, maybe 4 or 5 years after that, I needed a pair of shoes. And those shoes were gone, they're worn out. I go down to a brace shop to ask the guy about my shoe, and the guy's just sitting like you talking now. I told him I need a pair of shoes. What do you want them for? I said, what's wrong with this guy? I said, my shoes worn out. They you wear them, can't you? But, and he wouldn't give me a pair of shoes. But luck would have it. I had a sister-in-law who worked at VA at the same time. Matter of fact, every time I go in, she said, how you doing, Tom? Whatever. She said, what did he tell you? I said, she said, wait a minute. She said, she called another nurse, and they two of them came over there. He still got his attitude. She said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take Mr. Clark up to see the director. She got me on the elevator to the director. So I'm sitting like in chair. She called down to the brace shop. His name was Tom, too, by the way. And he come in there. He come flying through that door, I guess, mad with him. Now, I'm sitting back behind. And that means he's back to me. He went in to the director, and she's telling him, she said, we have a veteran down there that's saying that you won't get him pressed, you get him a new shoe. And what's his name? And he said, I'm tired of fooling him, blah, 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 blah. Tell me to come here, he wants a pair of shoes, blah, blah. And she told him, she said, let me tell you one thing. I want you today, go down to that office of yours, order him some pair of shoes, and when they come, I want to see him. Now, meantime, he turns around, I'm sitting there looking right at him. You could have bought him for a damn. I mean, he was mad as a wet hen. He went down. Now, he wasn't going to be outdone. Wasn't going to be outdone. Show how can people get in their heart. Okay, he ordered me a pair of shoes. Okay, and visualize this. My regular shoe was this side. My other shoe was this side. He made a shoe for my stump. In other words, the regular shoe would be, like I say, 8.5. Mm-hmm. The other shoe, my stump, I guess, 5, whatever. Now, I got a shoe and a half here. I get them shoes, and my wife told me, she said, your shoes came today through the mail. I'm happy now I get a decent pair. I opened those shoes up, and you could have bought me, my heart just boom. So I go back down to V again, take them into her, and Barbara said, okay, I'll do what you do. I'm going to take you to the director again. I go to the director. And she said, you get a pair of shoes, and she almost had to laugh herself. She kind of talked her head like that. And she said, okay, wait a minute. Boom, here come Tom again. Now, and this time, I mean, she really got him. Boy, she related to him, and she said, and not only that, I'm writing this up, whatever, coming down. And she said, I bet you when you get the pair of shoes again, I don't have to bring them here to me again. It better be right. Now, so what have y'all done? Now, still him going down, give me two pair of shoes like y'all do. He overdoes it. I'm getting shoes about every mother. My wife said, where are them shoes coming from? Now, he's still doing what he's doing in the first place. He overdoes it now because I'm getting more shoes. I went down to the brace shop. I said, can you wear all them shoes? They said, well, do what you want to. Throw them away. I don't care because if that's what he wants to do. Now, I'm getting another story about that shoe bit. My Marine group, we have a convention every year. We meet different states, whatever. Went to Philadelphia. And these veterans had the shoes like I have on now. Nice looking shoe. I didn't have this kind. I had they was okay, comfortable that bit, but these kind of dressy. I'm half sharp and whatever. You know, a decent pair of shoes. I asked the guy. I said, "Where you get those shoes?" He said, "The VA makes them." I said, "You got to be kidding." He said, "No." He said, "The VA makes them in Philadelphia. VA hospital in Philadelphia somehow gets the kind of shoes. I think they make them in New York and send them down to Philadelphia." Here I go back to the VA again. Come down to the VA and told the guy down there. I didn't talk to Thomas down, somebody a black lady down there, and I'll tell you about her in a minute. She said, "I think we can get your pair of shoes." She said, "That's kind you want?" I said, "Yes, I want." I'm greedy now again. I said, "Can I get a pair of brown ones too?" I get a pair of these kind. I got a black pair and a brown pair. Now, getting back to Miss Hinkle, the VA has had a habit. They may still do. I don't know because I don't know what. The certain thing that black veteran couldn't get, white veteran got. Now, prime example, I couldn't get. They have what they call a closing allowance that you're supposed to get a certain amount of money for closing allowance because if you're an amputee, you were supposed to get $700 now, about $600 then. She said, "Have you been getting that?" I said. So she said, "Okay, go." Went over to the old desk. I told that lady over there. I said, "I like to apply for a closing allowance." She said, "Who told you about it?" And she said, "Don't ever say about me because if you told them who I am, they may cut me off the information for you. But anything you want to find out, you come up here and when you go outside that door or whatever, go upstairs and I come up and talk to you. Don't ever let them know that I'm feeding this information to you." I said, "No, I would never do that." And they asked me, "Who told you?" I asked her, "What difference does it make?" "Oh, I didn't know. I just wondered how you found out about it." I told the guy in Philadelphia, said, "They got them." "Oh, okay. Now I get my dress shoes." Like everybody. So, but anyway, my story is some bad, some good, and whatever. Some is humorous, some is.
Yeah, well, how was the post office? Okay. Is that where you went to?
Yeah, okay. I kind of stopped. Post office. Okay. Here's another thing. I go in the post office. I started the post office as a mailman, the lowest level you can get. I didn't have much education. I'll tell you a story about that too. I'm I go back to my other hometown, Qatar. Where we grew up, they only had one school, one room school. You went from 1 to 8 in the same room, okay? But the good part of that was, sometimes things happen for the best. If you have sisters and brother older than you, they would tutor you. So I got tutored by my sister and brother, whatever. But when I went to Marine Corps, I hadn't even finished high school. But the luck would have, I got in the Marine Corps. I took some courses, got my high school diploma. Then I came out and I started going to school, piecing here, put pieces together here. But my education was kind of piecemeal. You know, I had a little something from Bellarmine, I had something from U of L, Kentucky State, put all this stuff together. And if you remember, I don't know if maybe too young remember this, they had a Greek, I think they call it common knowledge, they took all what you have learned over your lifetime, put it all together, and they give you a test. So like it's sort of like a GED test, but a little higher, whatever. So if you can pass all these tests, math and history, my good point was history. The other point was math. Now, when I grew up, they don't even do that anymore. You had to learn your multiplication. You had to learn them. You knew them. And my sister would drill me day by. We had tests. You get them from this class, and you start from one, and you had spelling bees. just like to do now, but that old fashioned, all that stuff put together. And by the post office. They didn't want to promote blacks. They did everything they could. They did me, I go in for tests, turn me down. They put out a thing where you take a test and get on a list, promotion list. When your time comes for promotion, they tear the list down and start all over again. And when they put you in for an interview, I went to interview about 3 times for a job. One of the jobs I had, I knew I had this job because I did that job. I had the platform job. That took care of all the trucks and mail and whatever. I knew that job inside and out. When I go for that job, when the job comes for bid, I got it. I know I got this. Go in that thing. And they asked me nothing about the job. They want to know about union. They want to know about accident reports and finance. And the list goes on. I'm sitting here looking. I said, what in the world? They asked me nothing about platform job. Nothing. I was devastated. When I got outside, I said, I'm dead. List came out. My name wasn't even on there nowhere. I said, okay, they did me in again. Second time I went in there, and I'm gonna be slick now. So I'm gonna try to learn about everything. I went to classes for the union. They have a thing in post office. You can go take that. You take everything you think you know that they would ask you, take the test. I mean, you learn what it going the second time. They asked nothing. They asked absolutely nothing. Now I'm dead again. So now, the third time, I'm quitting. I said, I own no part of it. I'm through with it. The reason I quit, because I was on what they call a 204B. That's an acting supervisor. I act on a supervisor job 2 years. When they promote a supervisor, they send them to me. In my training, in my area, I'll train them what job. They send me back. Now, I stayed in that job so long that I didn't have a job anymore. When I went back to my job was gone. They bought the job and gave somebody else. Now, I don't have a job. They put you on what they call an unassigned regular. So that means they put me anywhere, on an evening, whatever. I said, I went to the postmaster and told him. And when I went there to the postmaster to see him, he wouldn't see me at first. And his secretary wouldn't know what about. I said, I'm on my name off that promotion thing. She said, don't you do that. I said, I told her. She said, don't do that. She said, stay with it. I said, miss, I am sick of this. I said, that 3 times they did me in, I don't want no part of it. Take my name off it. So she's okay. Then about 2 weeks later, I get this letter from somebody in that office, in the personnel order, to tell me to come and see you. I didn't go see postman, I see somebody in his office. I said, Tom, what's wrong with you? I told him. He said, don't get discouraged. He said, we know what you've been through. He said, all your records are here. What you've done, you've been the mail handler, you've been LS. And one other thing somebody told me to do, and I've tried this, you volunteer for everything. I was on every kind of volunteer committee you think of, saving bonds. I'll tell you a story about saving bonds in a minute. I was on every kind of committee you could think of not doing. But on the saving bond program, I went and talked to a different individual. And when I first went to the post office, a guy told me about saving bond. He said, when you start working the post office, you join the saving bond. Said, they only take out about $3 a pay period. You won't have missed it. Just then, because he was the chairman then. I got in there, I did real well. I kept raising my bond. So I had to go talk to some mail handlers and clerks and whatever about saving bond. If you're in a program, you're doing it, when you think you could, you say, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. I went and told those guys that. They jumped all over me. The postman said, you can't do that. I said, I'm going to talk to them about saving bond. I can't tell them that I'm in the saving bond from day one. He said, that wasn't your job. Don't do it anymore. Be doggone. What can you think? Now, I was thinking, I thought I was being a hero to tell somebody that I'm saving bond. But I started out with the man told me, suggested to me that you start out $3-$4, you don't even miss it. You just take it out, and pretty soon those bonds build up. And I had a big stack of bonds, 1875 then, I think they were. And the material is maybe 5-6 years, I believe, to a $25 bond. told them guys that, and they heard about it, and they come jumped all over me. I said, oh, God. Now I'm ready to quit that thing. But I was on the Close the Child program. I was on, United Way. Well, work with them. And every kind of program I thought that would be part of me, getting, I was trying to get promoted, whatever. And post office pays was good. And if you can go from 4 to 17, I mean, you're up in the big money area. Mm-hmm. So finally, getting back to finish the story about the post office again. The last time I went in for an interview, I got the letter from and said, go see the personnel director, that they want you down for an interview. I told him, Neil Jordan, I said, Neil, there's no more point in me going down there. I said, they're gonna screw me up again like they did last time. I said, no. So what had happened? NAACP got on them, and a guy from Cincinnati came down and jumped all over them. A guy from Washington came down and got all over them. You promote those guys that's qualified. Something's going to be happening down here from top to bottom. You guys, those guys are qualified. You just can't keep doing that. So, but anyway, I found out later that they I had a little boost. So I went in for this interview this last time. I had two blacks and one white. This white guy was, it might be a little hip to me, it was in the Marine Corps one time. And I don't know how the conversation came up about, he might have known that I was in the Marine Corps, whatever. But anyway, he asked me a question that related to the jobs. All of them did. That sounds pretty good now. At least I found something I knew. But now I'm pretty well knowing it all. If it's going to be safety, I know that. One thing about safety, I'm not sure the government got this thing. They got a form that you fill out if an accident report. You ever see one of them government has? Mm. Oh, God. some stuff on there you don't even know why it's on there in the first place. But you have to know it's on there. So, but I've got this thing. I take it home, my wife, she drilled me on it. She drilled me on it. What's so-and-so-and-so, Jill? I took a union course. I knew the union. The list goes on. I'm ready for them now because I don't care what you ask me. I know something about it. I may not know it all. But anyway, that didn't even come up. But anyway, I got promoted. And I was on a job for 5.5 years on this high level. It was level 16. Now, they wasn't going to be outdone completely. Now, I've been on day shift forever to a point, 6:50 or whatever. I get promoted, put me on night shift. I had never worked on night shift. They my first night, instead of me going to sleep, they my little buddies took me over there on somewhere for we'll have a little cocktail and celebrate your promotion. I get to work. Supervisors go half hour earlier. They check the car. They got a built-in half hour overtime at the beginning, half hour at the end. And when all of them gone, you check the cards and we'll do all the cleanup things you have to do. So I got in at 9:30, and the guy training me, we walked around and whatever. About 1:30, I kept feeling like I was drunk. What's wrong with me? I was so sleepy. He said, when you take a lunch, go over in that locker room somewhere, take a little nap, and then come on back. I went over, I took a half hour. That half hour went so quick. But anyway, little by little, I really never got used to it. Never got used to it nice year. But there's some good in everything. The night job I had, I worked on Sunday nights. My off night was the Wednesday night, I think Wednesday night, Thursday night. That means I work 4 Sunday nights. I work Saturday night and then work Sunday nights. On each pay period, you get 4 Sundays, put it that way. Then you get 26% for a Sunday premium. You get 10% for night premium. So you're getting something like 36% of your salary, which is up here. Now, that went all real good. Then about 2 years, maybe 3 years, one night, almost every night something happened. The tractors and trailers on the highways would have a wreck, whatever, and you had to be investigate whatever. But didn't have a general foreman. Didn't have inspectors either, that matter. So the first night, first one in wreck, up in somewhere in Napa, somewhere, I called the inspector. I had a list of inspectors called. None of those guys were home. They had all wrong, a different number. Now I'm up creek now. I had to go investigate this accident because they had a lot of money, resume mail. Those resume packages, it values them $200,000 or $300,000. So you're talking about almost $1 million in whatever. They was afraid that somebody see the wreck and come by and start picking up whatever. And he had to go and take pictures and all that bit. So about a week later, two or so, the regular general foreman in day shift, I was telling him, I said, Kelly, I said, on weekends, almost everything happened. I said, we don't have general foreman. She said, I'll make you a general foreman on the weekend. So, it may sound funny, but she made me a general foreman over my other salary on the weekend. So now I'm getting general foreman pay on the weekend. I told her I made almost as much money on Sundays as I did a regular salary. But anyway, I did all right. Then after I retired at 55. I had 31 years. So I always liked to work outside. I mean, in flowers and garden, whatever. So me and another guy got together, and we had a lawn service. We had this lawn service for 11 years. If I'm looking back on it, that probably saved my life. I'm pretty good health now. My weight down, whatever. But I worked outside with him. We did flowers, and we did literally everything. The first year, I think we had my wife's old, she had old hatchback Datsun with the hatchback. Mm-hmm. I think we had one little lawnmower and one weed. Well, we thought we were just going to do a couple. It couldn't get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So my wife took a course on how to deal with taxes and did a whole bill. She made us an S corporation. Okay. Now we in the big time stuff now. But where's good, that's bad. You have to have, we had to have a workman conversation. We had all this other good stuff, whatever. And it turned that liability insurance saved us a fortune, because what happened? Two things happened. One guy, we went to Porter's funeral home. I don't even know if you're familiar with that in Louisville, big time funeral home in Louisville, one of the biggest black funeral homes. Okay. We were doing his lawn one time, and the guy cut the line for the air conditioner. And that was $1,100 right there. But the worst thing happened to us, do you remember, you know, Story Cable, you know who they are? It's Insight now. Mm-hmm. There was Story Cable then when we had. So we had a friend, I'm going to call it, I'll say what you can to me or not, that said, Tom said, won't you bid on Story Cable? So that, I said, we can't do that job. She said, bid on it anyway. I went bid, and the guy told me, he said, you guys, you underbid too low. He said, you can't handle what you... What you charge us, you just can't, you got to. So we still don't know how to bid on things. So my wife said, well, what we do is just double everything. We double, if it was $100, it's $200 on that round. Do you know they gave us that job? Now I'm scared to death now, because I'm way over my head, because I don't have the equipment, don't have the, so, but we did it. But my big problem was to keep employees. Because they work, you get them employees off the street somewhere, and they work Thursday, Friday, get paid, you disappear, you don't see it no more. And the other part was, in the wintertime, we had nothing for them to do. So in the summertime, we may have kept some of them, but the wintertime, they're gone. So we start all over again. But we did, and getting back to Story Cable, they had one there on Billtown Road. This guy had won a Stingray. You know, the Stingray's a car. Mm-hmm. $50,000-$60,000, I guess it was. And they, you know, they had this mirror across, it's convertible, had the mirror all the way across the top, whatever. So this guy working with me had a weed eater. You know, the weed eater kicked rocks out of it. Yeah. He broke that man windshield all the way across, and down inside his car. Oh, that guy came out of that building. I mean, he was fit to be tied. You guys got insurance? Oh, yeah. Turned it into insurance. Do you know that thing cost us $5,000 insurance? I could not. I said, it was only just a mirror. But he said, that's a brand new car, and they had to clean all the glass and all that bit. And I'm sure they just kind of gouged that insurance. But if we had that insurance, we'd have been out, you know. But we did. Right? Anything else I can do? Yeah. I don't know.
I'm just looking for maybe something you hadn't talked to about before, so. That's
what
I was asking.
Well, the other
thing,
post
office, I didn't know if you talked about that before.
Well, that part of post office, I'm getting promoted. But I'll tell you the good things in my life I did. I worked with YMCA. I've been with YMCA 40 some years. I started out doing a little thing, and I got into the campaign, raising money. The one thing I do, I've been lucky for me, somehow people just gravitate to me. I have a good face, I'm a con man, whatever. I have raised money almost everything. My wife's sorority, my Marine Corps buddies, anything that I dealt with, fundraising, been very successful with it. I'm serious, but I tell it like it is. I don't try to con anybody. I just tell them, you know, what we are doing. Then YMCA, I think about four years, I was a top money raiser. I think my goal was like $200,000 one year, $100,000 next year. But my personal goal for raising money with that YMCA had been anywhere from $6,000, $7,000, $8,000. My personal goal. Now, I don't even go to the Y anymore as far as campaigning. But the people that I got money from years, they send money in my name. They still do it. And I guess last year, for my name, they sent money in over $3,000 because they knew Porter's Funeral Home and church and different things. Somehow they just, I guess, they feel I'm sincere what I do or feel sorry for me. So I don't know why they do what they do. And I'm very proud of that. I try to tell those people, and I still believe it, any fundraising that you do, people give to individuals. If they feel that you are sincere what you're doing, they'll support you. But you can be con and trying to con somebody, it's just not going to work. My wife's horrible money, Mary. She gets into all those things and send to me. Matter of fact, she had something, I've never heard of it before in my life. They had a thing where you don't get anything for money. You just send letters out to an individual, and they'll send money to a Huntington, whatever she belongs to. And she said, I said, tell what you do. You give me the letters, those people, and you put my name as your helper. They started coming in. The other thing I did, she got a program. Oh, it's a program, and I guess maybe Frank may have the same thing. It's the Elder Care. Have you heard of Elder Care? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, she is a caller for that. Horrible at it because she forgets. I think the first Wednesday of the month, and about 8:15, she had not called anybody. I said, you better get on that, start calling. And then I realized who she's calling, and a lot of times she's gone somewhere. And the lady calls, Miss Clark there? I said, no. She said she didn't. I said, oh, no, I'll do it. I called those people, and to get on the phone, couldn't get them off. They won't talk. And so I wound up doing that for her.
Now, I assume that's not an Olympic gold medal.
No, I'm glad you asked about that. I'm glad you asked about that. Here's a story behind that. There's only a few in existence. I'll tell you, it started in 19, maybe it's been about 5 years. What they do, each convention year, they pick a two or three individuals that they feel need to be in this month upon Hall of Fame. It's what you did in the military, what you did on the outside, whatever, in my YMCA and other thing. So 2 years ago, I was recipient of this President's Gold Medal. And it's only a few have this. You know, if you see a guy with this on, you say, well, you know, I'm sure down the road there would be more. But I was one of maybe two or three of them at the beginning got this. So I've had a thing with the Mayor Averson one time. He has the same thing. He came back. He looked at it. I guess he said, I'm going to find out what this is. He came back and stood and talked to me, and I told him what this is. And the other guy I worked with, it was a mayor, it was Armstrong, you know, Dave Armstrong, dear friend of mine. And I tell you what about him, I don't care where he sees me, he'll stop. He had a big program out at Bowman Field about a couple of years ago. He was headed up to the podium to talk. He saw I'm way in the background. He stopped what he was doing. He came back and told somebody to get me, brought me back around and sit me down. Now, this for the last 3 years, 4 years. 4 years. I'm one of the few Korean veterans they honor. And the reason they do that, because I'm one of maybe a few, I'm not too many left, that survived that reservoir. Mm. The one that didn't freeze it there, eventually, you know, I don't know where they are. Now, it's the only one I know of is in Kentucky. It's up in some part of eastern part of Kentucky. They had a program one time, and I had a chance. You remember they had the airplanes over in Indiana, what do you call it? Was it kind of air show? They have all different planes in there.
Yeah.
Okay, he was a guest there, and I was too. We didn't know each other. So Jim Black was introducing all this around, you know, Thomas Clark's Chosen Reservoir. And I saw this guy get up, come around, and sit down. He said, are you one of the chosen reservoir? And he said, I said, yes. He said, I'm one too. So here I go again. I stayed in touch with him a little while, and it's my fault. My wife get him all the time not doing it. I lost contact with him. But I'm not sure if he's still living. But the word around Louisville, Kentucky, I'm one of the few, I'm the only one that they on record there that survived that chosen reservoir. When they honor me, they honor the oldest World War One veteran. Godly, just died here last year. God, you know I know that man. He volunteered for the VA forever. He was 100 and some odd when he died. Fair alert. 2 years ago, I was sitting here. See, I was on the end. But anyway, he was sitting next to me. Me, this guy, and a guy, Crump, on the other end. So they started calling names, and Thomas Clark. And they said, he leaned on me. He said, it's kind of hard to hear. And he said, are you Ken the Barber Clark? I said, that's my sister-in-law, the one I told about did the VA stuff for me. He said, she was my nurse. That's about 15 years passing. Do you know he said, sat right beside me and wrote her a letter? Perfect writing. On his knee, he wrote on his program, "Dear Mrs. Clark, this so and so good." And I gave it to Barbara, and tears just rolled down her eyes. She said, "I can't believe that he remembered me all those years." He did. I'm trying to think that poor man's name. You know, I know his name as well. But anyway, they call off ever so often, every year or two. They have honored the Korean veterans in World War One and World War Two. Now this other guy was a Pearl Harbor survivor, Thomas Crump, his name. Matter of fact, I was up here, I guess about three or four years ago now, where we was at the legislation. They honored us, and I was one of about three of us. We're honored at the Capitol with the thing from Neil and what's the other guy's name from Louisville? Senator, there's only one senator is from Louisville, black senator is Neil. Representative would be not Bather. What's the other guy? Meeks. Meeks. Yeah. Yes. Now Meeks's father was in the Marines, so that's why he. But anyway, I have a picture of that where the honors are up here. But you know, over the years, my wife said, "Well, how many more things they're gonna do?" I said, "I'll just take it along." you probably don't realize, maybe you do, because you wouldn't be doing it if you hadn't. You don't really appreciate somebody that would take the time out and say thank you. Mm-hmm. That's all. That's all you ask. Just say thank you. I saw a picture with the Tom Cruise. You said a picture where he said, every now and then, I just want you to say thank you. That's all. Every now and then, I do things at the church, and I've done this for 13 years. I what they call the Man of the Year honor. And sometimes when you're trying to introduce somebody, you're trying to make a statement, whatever. One of the things popped in my mind is, I don't know how I read this happens. I use a thing like, you drive on the highway, for instance, a street, whatever. When somebody gives you a certain amount of courtesy, let you in, whatever, you throw up your hands, you feel good. They do too. If more people did that, it'd be less roadways. I mean, you give and take on the highway. Mm-hmm. Somebody lets you in the traffic. You don't have to do it, but you just feel good when you do it. So that's what I do when I say that about, let's throw up our hand and say, thank you, these guys. And about 3 weeks ago, we honored one of the guys at our club. And I've used so much now, everybody know what I'm going to say when I say it, is that if you drive on the highway and if somebody extends you a certain amount of courtesy, they throw up your hand and say thank you. And I do that. And my wife asks me all the time, why do you wear your cane? I didn't do it for a while. Matter of fact, for about 10 years, I don't want no talk part of it. Just leave me alone. Let me go on by my business. But over the years, I think people really make you feel that they are sincere when they talk to you about it. They're not trying to find out what you did or what you didn't do. They're trying to make you a hero. They just want to know, they say, well, thank you, what you're doing for your service, whatever. So I got all kind of caps I wear now. When I go to Kroger's, people stop in and say, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. You know, females go out there, lady, stop me. The stranger thing, that school out there, Wilder, my grandkids go to Ballard, which is next door to them. And so I used to.
A rotary machine gun.
This is way away, but did you ever think you'd live to see a black president?
No. No. I'd really had the wildest dream. I would never thought that he would be anywhere close to being. And matter of fact, when he was running, I was, for a long time, I said, man, you have to get out. You're not going. The thing about him, he campaigned himself. Mm-hmm. He literally did it himself because he has gift of gab. He has all this thing about him. And he's no dummy, for number one. But he got himself into a hornet's nest, and I don't. He seemed to be taking them, but he's aged. If you notice that, I feel sorry for him now because I just found out. I think yesterday that his cholesterol is high. You read about that? Never knew this until a couple of days ago. That he smokes, and the conversation was, there's something President Obama does that nobody ever sees him do. I said, what could the world could that be? So when they said smoke, I said, oh God. And I kind of, I don't say criticize him, but because I never smoked. And the strange thing about my smoking, when I went in the military, I worked at the tobacco company. Started at Lucky Strike Tobacco Company. Never even thought about putting a cigarette in my mouth. Went all the way to Korea. And on the ship, they give you a carton of cigarettes. I gave away at first. I wound up selling them. So, but anyway, I never smoked. But I did real well when I got out of service, forward my way. I kept my weight down really good, even at the post office, even with that line service. But I've gained more in the last, I guess maybe last year. I began to feel that I put on a couple pounds. But for a while, I was in exercise program at the VA, and at the Baptist East Hospital, they got a program. They will check your blood pressure and eyes and all that good. And they got a wellness program that you go, you walk and whatever. And I don't care what you say, walking is good for you. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem I had for a while because those crazy shoes I had wouldn't allow me to do any much walking. But now I can do it. But I'm Democrat, public, whatever. Doesn't make me any different. But when you do something that you hurt people. I don't care what party you belong to. I'm not. A bunny may be thinking in this right or whatever, but I think the guy may have kind of got off track mentally way back there because things he was saying done. This thing here is just dropping the bucket because he had to run in an army with McConnell or whatever, talking about I'm gonna quit and sort of point somebody in my place and all that kind of bull. I don't care what your politics are, but you let your politics interfere your good thought, good sense, then it becomes a different ball game. Mm-hmm. Whatever he's doing now, maybe the idea about the stimulus money might be all right, but you hurting school people and people unemployed will work if no jobs available for them. So why would you do that? But I think his own party now has begun to realize that he's a maverick out there, but not a very good one either at that.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me up here, and sorry to get a chance to show you my good stuff here, but she does make sense because that guy wrote that book down in South Carolina. He makes sure that he controls that, you know. He makes sense. So, but
at the very least, they want credit.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, they don't want somebody taking it.
But that could get out of hand, really, if that didn't control it like that, because everybody be selling and giving away and whatever. He put a lot of work in producing that and let somebody else come along and take away, you know. Mm-hmm. It, yeah. What'd you do in the government?